between the life we see and the world we dream, there are stories when they are told. Nightmares become imagination. So please.
Thomas, you aren't.
Hello to the guild. Are you ready to have your routine disturbed? Welcome to the Dim Light Anxiety Podcast. I'm your host, Giggles, and today's episode is going to be a little different. I didn't have all of the story of Whoops, I Woke the Dead, like I thought I did, and I didn't realize it until I already had most of my stories lined up for when they're coming out, so, I mean, what a wonderful problem to have. I love that I have this great, intricate story to perform, but that means that this episode is going to be pretty much split in half. That is why you even see two titles. Think of it as two episodes for the price of one. I mainly wanted to make sure that everyone was able to find each part of the story, especially since this is such an important section of this series. However, the final chapter of the story will come out in July for the third anniversary of this podcast, so keep your eyes and ears out. Like one of our horror creatures lurking under your bed, you won't be able to stop thinking about it until you face it head on. So, an update from last month with all those car troubles I was having. I had one shop. Oh my gosh, I can't even believe this. Like, I had one shop tell me that the transmission was going to be $8,000 to fix. I mean, shut the fuck up. Long, stressful story short, it ended up being just a sensor problem in the transmission and not a whole transmission problem. So I didn't have to replace the transmission, thankfully. Yet, at least. Who knows what the future holds? I really hope it doesn't hold that, but you never know. Okay, well, anyway, this isn't a podcast about cars. Let's move on to our main point. After all, you all know what I'm crazy for is scary stories. From campy to, are those gunshots or fireworks? Scare, I want to hear them all because your fucked up brains came up with them. Which leaves us with one very important question. What's your story? Send your creepy creations to dimlightanxiety@gmail.com if you want to hear them on this podcast. Because, as we all know, nightmares are a terrible thing to waste. Speaking of nightmares, let's begin. We have a lot of scaring to do. This first story is brought to you by the horrific writer you can find on Reddit under the username JRubus. But before we jump into his world, let's refresh ourselves with what happened last month. Jess cowered into Mark, terrified whimpers rising from her hitching chest, and Tim laid curled in the grass like a baby in the womb. I'm pretty sure he would have been crying for mommy if his vocal cords weren't frozen. Me? I sat there in shock, cast for once into total silence. I know I could be kind of silly and maybe even a little annoying, but right then and there, all of that dried up. They were everywhere. All skeletal faces, sparse hair, gaping eye sockets, squirming maggots, teeth, lipless smiles. Their voices came together in a hellish din of moaning. And the sound alone was enough to shove me back. Huh. That's not possible. Zombies aren't real. My paralysis broke with a throat-rending screech. I still wonder how much of it was the book, and how much of it was actually her. submitted for the approval of the Guild with Dim Light Anxiety. I call this story The Tale of Waking the Dead, Part 3. At the same time all of that was going down, my boy Langston was stuck at work, alone, with Pat. Pfft, I'd rather have the zombies. That night, three people, counting Pat, were supposed to work in addition to Langston, but two of them, Kyle and Amber, called out. You'd think it was to party or go trick-or-treating, but nope. They had mono, aka the kissing disease. We all know what that means. Their tongues were in each other's mouths. Anyway, Langston was trapped at Pissy's with Pat, and probably hating every minute of it. See, Pat's like a socialist. He spreads all the wealth around. The quote-unquote wealth, in this case, being his BS. Since Amber and Kyle were out, that meant he heaped it all on Langston. He bitched because the bathrooms weren't clean. Even though they were, he ordered Langston to scrub the fryers just for the sake of issuing an order. He even made Langston get on a wobbly chair and dust the overhead lights. Whoa, be careful. All the while, Pat stood there with a smug expression on his greasy little mug. He just loved telling people what to do. Makes sense, I guess. He's completely powerless in any other aspect of his life. So when he gets to work, where he has a monocle of control, it goes straight to his head. Langston bore all of this with a stoicism you can't help but respect. He mopped and remopped the bathrooms, made the fryers sparkle, took out a quarter full trash, swept cigarette butts out of the parking lot, dusted the lights, cleaned the tables, made pizzas, and was always right there at the register when someone needed him. He didn't sweat. He didn't roll his eyes. His face remained sleepy, eyes drooping, expressionless expression. Is that an oxymoron? Anyway, all that mattered to him was making enough money to track down Quentin Tarantino and avenge Bruce Lee. If he had to put up with Pat, so be it. Just past 8, Pat locked himself into the office to do quote-unquote filing, but I bet money he was really drawing a 9-year-old boy doing his 17-year-old sister. Or maybe he was using the PC to throw his weight around that fandom he's in. Either way, Langston was finally alone. He stood behind the counter, shoulders slumped, and waited for someone to come in. Outside, four kids tore past in the street, screaming bloody murder, and Langston watched with a dull apathy. I like to think he recognized me and thought, hey, there's Alex. She looks cool, even when she's running for her life. But let's be honest, folks, he most likely didn't. Moments after we passed, a large, sloppy group of people in dirty burial suits and dresses filled the street. Many walked at a gait, but some of the fresher ones moved a little quicker, moaning, arms outstretched, feet dragging behind them. They looked like either homeless people escaped from L.A. or the most dedicated bunch of Thriller cosplayers this side of the 80s. Oh, great, Langston thought. The Brenner's party let out early. On the bright side, maybe they'll want some pizza. Two of them split from the pack and came to the door, both men. Their coats and pants were muddy and ripped, just like their flesh, and one had a gaping hole in his left cheek. Nice makeup. One opened the door and they shuffled in, their steps uncertain, shoes scraping the tiles and leaving clumps of dirt in their wake. Fabulous, Langston thought. Just incredible. Want to screw up the John, too? They came up to the counter and studied the menu overhead. One of them smacked his lips together and looked at Langston. His voice was deep and raspy, almost like he'd been eating dirt for the past 60 years.
Can I get large anchovy and brain pizza, please?
Langston arched his brow.
Brain?
The zombie smiled nervously.
I was hoping you wouldn't notice my strange request, it seemed to say. We don't have brains here, Langston said. If we did, we'd work somewhere else.
The zombie sagged disappointedly.
All right, just anchovies.
Langston looked at the other one. It squinted at the menu, then held its hand to its forehead to cut out the glare of the lights.
Your wings, do they come in pepper people flavor?
No, they do not, Langston said, becoming irritated.
This is a normal pizza parlor. If you want something like that, you're going to have to go to Dahmer's House of Cannibalism down the street.
The zombies both perked up.
Can you give us directions?
Langston opened his mouth to explain he was joking, but the door crashed open and another zombie lurched in. This one so badly decomposed that its skull was exposed. A web crisscrossed one eye socket, and the spider that made it scurried into its mouth as it approached the counter. And it shoved the other two out of the way, leaned over, and grabbed the front of Langston's shirt, pulling him close.
Bray!
In his usual flat-toned voice, Langston said,
Sir, can you get your hands off me?
The first two zombies looked from skull face to Langston and back again, like old townspeople warily watching a pair of dueling gunslingers.
Brains!
Skullface repeated. Its breath raped against Langston's nose, and the chill of its touch sank into his bones.
Now, sir, I'm telling you, next time, I won't be so nice about it. Get your hands off me.
Skullface leaned closer. Now its noseless nasal cavity was inches from Langston's lips.
What are you gonna do, fat boy?
Langston froze. Apparently, when he was in school, kids used to tease Langston about his weight. A lot. In seventh grade, he weighed close to 210 pounds, and everyone made fun of him for it. They called him tubby, lardass, fatso, and a bunch of other really hurtful names. They made him sit by himself at lunch, and no one ever played with him at recess or had so much as a kind word to say. A girl he liked found out about his crush on her and told him to his face that she'd never date a tub of lard like you. He was isolated, sad, and hated himself. Then he found Bruce Lee movies, and watching Bruce fly around the screen beating up bad guys made life a little bit more manageable. Langston took up kung fu and lost most of the junk in his trunk, though some still stuck. Where was I? Oh, yeah, anyway, calling him fat was the exact wrong thing to do. All those bad memories, all that hatred of his bullies and himself, all those friendless days in middle school and dateless nights in high schools, all the taunts, jeers, name-calling, all of that crap came back to him in a rush, and he fucking flipped. First, bright red crept across his face. Then his lips peeled back from his teeth. He started to shake like a powder keg getting ready to explode. First, bright red crept across his face. Then his lips peeled back from his teeth. He started to shake like a powder keg getting ready to blow. And boiling rage shot up from his stomach like Old Faithful, only hotter. Fast as quicksilver, he grabbed the zombie's hand and twisted, breaking it off from his wrist with a dry crunch. Screaming, he brought his arm up and threw out his elbow, hitting Skullface across the chin. The zombie's head whipped to one side and it stumbled back. All of Langston's repressed feelings toward Pat, Quentin Tarantino, his bullies, that rude cop who pulled him over 6 months ago, his I'll-fix-it-later slumlord, consumed him like a nuclear death cloud, and a switch flipped in his brain. Langston went away, and Kung Fu Psycho took its place. He ripped his shirt off Hulk Hogan style and jumped onto the counter, then ducked and hit a sick spinning kick that smashed one of the zombies in the face. He jumped down on bent knees and Skullface rushed him. Langston threw a quick jab at the shattered ribs, then followed it up with a sharp left. Skullface fell back, shook its head, and came again, seething with undead fury. Langston jumped and did some kind of scissor kick move, and Skullface flew off. Its body stayed standing, though, and Langston kicked it again. This time it toppled over, hit the floor, and broke into 1,000 pieces. Panting, Langston stood over his foe, then remembering the others, he spun and held his open hands to his face, ready to chop the first thing he saw. One of the zombies fell on him, and Langston sidestepped, hitting it across the back. It turned, and Langston danced from one foot to another, fists up, face drenched in sweat. The zombie faked a step, then launched at Langston. Wah-ya! Langston's fist crashed into the zombie's nose, broke through its weakened facial structure, and sank deep into its thigh-filled cavity. The ghoul lost its fight and went limp. Dead. For good. Ripping his hand out like Excalibur from the fabled stone, Langston turned on to the third zombie. The zombie looked up and down, then backed away slowly to the door, hands up.
Hey, man, I don't want any trouble.
It bumped into the door, felt behind it for a handle, then slipped out into the night. Langston watched it hurry away. Then there were more in the street, all making their way west. Like a rabid dog with the taste of blood in its mouth, Langston couldn't stop, wouldn't stop. Not until his wrath had been spent. Going around to the end of the counter, he reached into the drawer and pulled something reverently out. The white headband with a big red dot on the front. The Japanese rising sun. He stretched it taut, threaded it around his brow, and tied it just as the office door opened and Pat swaggered, all 5'4" of him.
What the hell was that noise? Were you watching Bruce Lee movies on your phone again?
He noticed Langston's bare chest and sputtered,
Put your shirt back on. What are you doing?
Pat was the type of guy who just didn't know when to quit. He got closer and closer to Langston, griping the entire way. Langston's eyes narrowed, and when Pat was in striking distance, he curled his fingertips against his palm and shot out his arm. The heel took Pat in the temple, and the fat, pervy phantom hack dropped like a sack of dirty diapers, knocked clean unconscious. Langston glowered down at him, then went off to find more ass to kick. I stumbled, started to fall, and threw my arms around a stop sign. Tim stopped next to me, clasped his hands to his knees, and bent over, back rising and falling with the seething tide of his exhalations. Mark leaned against the tree and just slumped her shoulders. We were on a residential street corner surrounded by lower middle classes. Lights burned in the windows and from over front doors, but the sidewalks were empty. I don't recall passing anyone on the way, but I was kind of preoccupied.
Where are we?
Tim panted. After we got away from Wilka, we booked it. Our only thought to put as much distance between us and the ravenous horde as possible. I looked around for a guidepost, but nothing was familiar. Not the yards, not the ranch houses presiding over them, not the street signs. Where were we? Oh God, where were we? Cool night wind rustled the trees and brought the sound of distant moaning to my ears. Come on. Come on, I've been all over this dumb town. I know this place. I just have to think. Think. Freaking think. Let's see. I remember going through downtown, so we have to be on the west side. Home is here, too. Must have come this way on instinct. I looked around again, turning slow, stricken circle. Then I saw it. A mailbox shaped like a bass. I knew that mailbox. I passed it every day on the way to school. Just called it tacky, but I thought it was neat. This way, I said. No sooner had I spoken, six zombies emerged from the dark behind us. My breath caught and my heart dropped to my feet. One spotted me and pointed, "There they are!" Jess glanced over her shoulder and screamed, "Come on!" I snatched Jess by the wrist and started running.
"Get him!"
the zombie yelled. A strangled sob exploded from Jess's throat, and she pumped her arms and legs to match my pace. Tim and Mark were behind me, I think. I won't lie, my only thought was for myself and Jess. That sounds selfish, but you try getting chased by the undead. Our street appeared to the right. My hold on Jess's hand broke, and she went to her knees. I stopped, but Mark and Tim were already scooping her up. The zombies were 20 feet back, maybe 30, and gaining fast. Someone whimpered, and I realized it was me. The house sits on the left at the end of the block. The porch light was on, a beacon of light calling, beckoning, promising safety. I pushed myself harder, feet flying over the pavement, breathing coming in hot gasps, blood crashing against my temples. I veered across the yard, reached the bottom of the steps, and slid on the walkway and fell. I sprang to my feet, trampled up the stairs, and threw myself at the door where I stopped and looked back. Tim and Mark flanked Jess, each with an arm around her shoulders. She limped heavily, hissing with every step. The zombies were 15 feet back, now 10. My heart thudded, my stomach clenched. Snatching the knob, I twisted and fell against the door, wrenching it open. Mom sat on the couch and Dad in his chair, her watching TV and him just reading a paper. They both startled and looked up. Tim and Mark got Jess in, and I slammed the door behind them. Jess was crying, Tim and Mark panting.
"What the hell?"
Dad demanded. Jess collapsed to the floor and gave in to her tears, and Mark dropped to one knee.
"What?"
Dad asked with an edge of worry in his voice, Mom already rushing to Jess's side and kneeling. Tim went to the front window and peeked through the blinds like a paranoid crackhead, and I fumbled for my phone, then cussed when I didn't find it. I must have dropped it somewhere. I said something, but it came out as incoherent babble. They stroked Jess's back and shushed her. And Dad got up.
"They're out there,"
Tim said and backed away from the window. "We gotta call the cops and board up the doors and windows," I said in a rush. Dad looked from one of us to the other like we were crazy.
"All right," he said in a commanding tone.
his dad voice. What the hell is going on here?
Zombies, me and Tim said in unison. Mom's brow creased disbelievingly, and Dad's eyes cracked to mistrustful slits. He looked like I just told him something completely insane.
Zombies?
The undead, I said.
Ghouls,
Tim added.
The living impaired, Mark said.
Dad looked from one of us to the other like we were nuts.
What happened, Jess?
He finally asked, because to him, she was the most trustworthy of all of us. Nice, Dad. Real nice.
Zombies, she managed through her tears. Mom, deflated. Great. Jesse's crazy now, too, and Dad hung his head.
We're telling the truth, Tim said.
They're right outside, I confirmed. They chased us all the way here. Dad took a deep breath and let it out.
That's enough. There are no zombies. They're not real. They...
But...
He held up a forestalling hand.
But nothing. Maybe someone played a prank on you or something, but there aren't any zombies out there.
Yes, there are. Jess hitched.
That did it. He went to the door.
No, I wailed. God, don't open the door.
Suddenly, everyone was talking at once.
Enough, Dad said. I'm going to show you there aren't any damn zombies.
He unlocked the door. Jess howled. Tim winced, and I braced myself. The door opened, and Dad recoiled. Six zombies stood on the porch like a group of macabre Christmas carolers. The one in front, a short creature with a belly and the last remnants of curly brown hair on either side of a bald spot, had his head up and bald as though he were preparing to knock. He let it fall and cleared his throat.
Excuse me.
He trailed off.
Kev?
He asked uncertainly. Dad's eyes grew to twice their normal size, and his mouth fell open in surprise. The color drained from his face with an almost audible sucking sound, and for a second he gaped. Then his brows lowered analytically.
Dale?
Dale, the zombie, laughed heartedly.
Well, shove a stick up my ass and call me a corn dog. How you been?
Mom was frozen in place, breath bated, from the look of mind-bending horror in her brown eyes. I could tell she knew Dale the zombie, too. Or had when he was alive.
Good, Dad said numbly. You?
Dale shrugged.
Remember that stomachache I had? I should have gone to the doctor.
He slapped his knee in grated laughter.
Anyway, look, me and the boys were chasing some kids and they ran in here. Yeah, Dad stammered. My daughters.
Dale's face fell.
Ooh.
He rubbed the back of his neck.
Well, this is awkward. I guess there's a... No chance of you handing them over, huh? No!
Dad cried and flung the door closed.
All right, fellas,
Dale's voice, muffled, said.
We're breaking in!
Mom shook her head like a woman coming awake from a dream and gestured crazily at the door.
What was that?
Zombies.
Dad's voice was low and filled with wonder. Something slammed against the door from the outside, and it shook in its frame. Dad threw himself against it, and Mom jumped to her feet.
"You," Dad said and jutted his chin at Mark, "go in the master bedroom and get my gun. It's in the closet."
Mark stood and rushed off, and Mom grabbed her cell phone off the coffee table. She dialed a number, then held it to her ear. I went to the window and pushed the blinds aside and peered out into the night. I didn't see anything, but I could hear them talking to each other.
"Go break that window," Dale ordered. "I can't do it. It's bad luck."
Dale sighed.
"Really? You believe in that supernatural crap?" "I'm literally a waking corpse. Yes."
"Good point. Never mind." Mom threw her head back. "The line is busy." The banging grew louder as a half a dozen hands beat against the door and the side of the house. Mom helped Jess up and guided her to the couch. They sat, and Mom pressed Jess's head to her chest. Mark returned, holding an assault rifle, so wicked and intimidating looking, you could describe it too well, and it'd probably give you PTSD. Black and sleek with a scope, a shoulder strap, and a curved magazine, it screamed, "Ban me." Dad took it and turned to the door, which jumped and trembled in its frame.
"Get back," he ordered,
and Tim and I joined Mom, Mark, and Jess by the couch. Dad unlocked the handle and fell back, and the door crashed open. Dale and the others started to come in, then froze.
"Oh shit, he's got a gun!"
The rifle spoke, and even though I was expecting it, I jumped anyway. The reports were deafening, and sent cartridges ejected from the chamber in a steady stream, hitting the floor and bouncing like brass dreidels. Rounds pelted Dale's abdomen, kicking up puffs of dust as he fell back into the crowd, a look of pain crossing his face. Bullets struck the support beams holding up the porch roof, ripped a zombie's face half off, sent another falling back over the railing, and blew out the throat of a woman with one eye. Screaming and falling over themselves to escape, the others scattered like roaches. Dad wedged the butt of the gun onto the crook of his shoulder and followed. Outside, a spreading army of ghouls lumbered aimlessly through the streets, down the sidewalks, and across front yards. Dad missed a beat, then opened fire, hitting a skeletal man in the head. The zombies reacted by diving out of the way, ducking behind cover, or throwing themselves to the ground.
"Ah, call the cops!" one yelled.
The rifle clicked out of bullets and Dad lowered it. The mass was already coming, closing around the porch like a noose. 10 zombies, 50, 100, every single one of the West Vale's escapees, all shambling toward him in a single pulsing wave. They backed into the house and slammed the door.
"There's too many of them,"
something then seemed to occur to him, and he turned around.
"What exactly happened? How'd this start?"
Jess, Mark, and Tim all looked at me.
Feeling 2 inches tall, I raised my hand slowly.
Dad's brow angled down in an angry V, and Mom glared at me like I did something wrong.
"Alex, what did you do?"
"She read a cursed spell book in the cemetery," Jess sniffed.
Then the dead came back."
Mark nodded.
"That's pretty much how it happened."
"Real smart, Alex," Mom said. Her voice dripped with sarcasm. "Because that could never go wrong."
I didn't know. I didn't think spells and zombies were actually real."
Something hit the door and Dad started. "We need to cover these windows and doors."
He pushed away and went over to the entertainment center.
"Mark, Tim, help me with this thing. Maria, Grab me a fresh clip, my 357, and a couple of guns for everyone else. While Mom went to gather Dad's arsenal, Mark took the TV off the entertainment center and set it on the coffee table. Then he, Dad, and Tim moved the complex in front of the door. On the couch, Jess hugged herself and rocked back and forth like a girl in a padded room. And I stood there, lost, and not knowing what to do. The banging started to get louder and more insistent, filling my head like a death knell. My mom came back, struggling with a box, and set it on the couch. "I got guns," she said.
Dad came over, bent, and rummaged around the box until he found his 357 chrome, as big as a big cannon. Next, he took out a compact automatic and held it out to me. I eyed it warily, like Spanish. Shooting was a passion one of my parents tried and failed to pass on to me. I've never touched a gun in my life, and I didn't know the first thing about them. "You hold it by the barrel thingy and use it as a club, right?"
"Here," Dad ordered. "You got us into this mess."
That was true. Sighing, I took the gun and turned it over in my hand.
"The safety's on. Turn it off to shoot."
He held another gun out to Jess, and she looked at it as though it might bite.
"Take it."
She hesitated, then took it. When everyone had a handgun, gee, Dad has enough here to start his own right-wing militia. Dad and Tim went to the front window. Mom brought a toolbox in from the garage, and Mark broke the legs off the kitchen table, then carried it into the living room.
"We're gonna nail it up," Dad said. "I won't."
The window exploded in a shower of glass, and before Dad could react, a head came through, mouth wide open. It flopped against his arm, and he pulled back with a yelp. My heart stopped. If they bite you, you turn into one of them. Dad held his arm up and studied the wound. The skin wasn't broken, only scratched.
"Yeah," the zombie said smugly. "There's plenty more where that came from, buddy."
Dad jammed the gun against the head and it went cross-eyed.
"Wait, I won't do it again, I promise."
The gun jumped and the zombie slumped to the side. As soon as he was out of the way, a forest of arms reached through, and Dad yelled and ran over to help him. Tim, Mark, and Mom pushed the table flush with the window and hold it in place while Dad hammered it to the wall. The zombies on the other side pushed, pounded, and battered, and my arm muscles strained against the assault. Dad stepped back to survey his work and nodded.
"All right," he said. "Now rest."
Next door, Old Man Kraus shuffled through his darkened living room and muttered oaths under his breath. It was late, for him, and someone was knocking at his door. Damn kids, didn't they know no porch light meant no candy? He kicked the edge of the coffee table with his bare foot, and pain denoted the center of his soul. Still, the incessant knocking, pounding.
"Goddamn fools!"
He went to the door, unlocked the knob, and ripped it open. A group of dead people stood on his step, and he blinked in surprise, his ire suddenly gone. The lead zombie, a man in a suit, leaned in and studied the old man's face. Wrinkles, liver spots, shallow skin, faded eyes. Mr. Krause's heartbeat sped up and a paralyzing terror gripped him. The zombie rocked back on its heels and heaved a dejected sigh.
Never mind, guys. He's one of us.
Mumbling their disappointment, the zombies turned and filed down the stairs. It took a minute for the zombies' words to sink in. And when they did, Mr. Krause's face screwed bitterly up.
I don't look that goddamn bad, he said. Do I?
If zombies reacted to me that way, my first reaction would also be to say, do I really look that bad? But seriously, how are they going to get out of this? I can't believe we have to wait 2 months before we finally receive our satisfaction with this much anticipated ending of this terrific story. Well, you heard it too. What do you think? Was it scary enough? Or better question, can you do better? Can you scare the laughter out of me? Now for the details. Today's writing prompt is inspired by my car troubles. Finding myself in the middle of nowhere, my car started to make a weird noise before it suddenly died. When I went to pop the trunk, I could swear that the car was smiling. Use that sentence as inspiration or those exact words in your story. Either way, let them lead you to your nightmare. The idea is scary enough, but it's what you do with it that can send it over the edge. Why did the car stop here? Was it on purpose? If so, what is in it for the car? And what is waiting for the driver? I am dying to know. Once you are able to squeeze a story out of your brain, send it to my email for a chance to have it come to life on this podcast. If you don't know my email, just check out the website. Links to my email and social media are all on the website, as well as so much more. What is the website, you ask? Well, that's easy. It's just the name of the podcast with the .com at the end. That's dimlightanxiety.com. Speaking of stories, let's give one final shout out to our fabulous writer you can find on Reddit under the username jrubus. If you enjoyed this story and or today's episode, please give me a like, follow, subscribe, review on any platform you use to listen to today's episode. Just something as simple as one of these options, you know, just a click on one of them, really helps these writers get more attention, and they really deserve that. They work really hard. If you're feeling really passionate, however, about this podcast, tell your friends. Tell your friends' friends. Fuck, tell a stranger. Let them all leave laughing scared. Don't forget, the last part of the story will reappear on July 13th for the 3rd anniversary of the birth of this podcast. Until then, here's a taste of what that piece is to come. Three zombies appeared down the street, staggering like drunks on their way home. They spotted Langston and started to lope toward him, hopping from one foot to the other. Langston threw his arms behind him, ducked his head, and yelled, "Better run!" Ed ran at them, feet barely touching the ground. The zombies paused as if having second thoughts. But it was too late. If that doesn't tickle your interest, you just may be a zombie as well. Okay, moving on. It is finally time for the second story of the night on this double feature episode. Written by the amazing writer I've featured on this podcast before. I'm kind of in love with their style of writing. You can find them on Reddit under the username Kessel the Viking. Check out the description for the correct spelling and to see a link of their PayPal if you want to support them. This terror tale, like all the others I have performed by this writer, haunts my nightmares. Talk about a vacation from hell. Or maybe in this case, to it. Makes me second guess my love of travel. I didn't say I would stop, though. All right, the anticipation is over. Here's our second story. Submitted for the approval of the Guild with Dim Light Anxiety, I call this story The Tale of the Hotel at Lake Tahoe. I was told not to tell anyone about this, but it's been years since it happened, so I think it should be okay now. A long time ago, when I was still in middle school, my family and I went on a vacation. We flew to California and then rented a car to drive north to Lake Tahoe. We came in at night, so there wasn't much to see, and for the most part, I slept. When we finally reached the hotel we would be staying at, I was surprised that there was snow on the ground. I mean, it was nearly summer. My stepdad told me that we were actually in the mountains and that a glacier was nearby. I thought it was really interesting, but I still couldn't see any of it since it was night. We brought everything inside and spoke to the receptionist. He seemed apprehensive, or perhaps worried, like he was waiting for some kind of imminent disaster. My mother gave him the information he requested and handed her the key to our room. He pointed to his right and said, "Walk forward to the corridor, take a left, and follow it all the way to the end." My stepdad thanked him, and we proceeded to carry our belongings to our room. I remembered the receptionist stared intensely at me as I walked by, and it didn't make me feel a bit uneasy. Our room was much more like an apartment as opposed to a hotel room. It had 3 bathrooms, and to someone as young as I was, it might as well have been a palace. I still had to share a room with my brother, though. And my sister, of course, got one for herself. By the time we got ourselves all settled in, it was time for bed. So we all went to our rooms, laid down, and tried to sleep. I fell asleep quickly, but one thing did seem to linger in my mind. Why was our vehicle the only one in the parking lot? That following morning, we were supposed to go to breakfast at Denny's in town. As kids often do, my siblings and I decided to explore the hotel while our parents got ready. I remember my mom saying, "Don't go too far, and when we call your names, you better be here right away." Obviously, we agreed. Well, anyway, we ran into the hall, and I noticed the immediate lack of people, of sound even. The corridor was so incredibly quiet despite our obnoxious footsteps and playful laughter. It really made me feel like we were the only ones staying there. As we crossed the corridor and connected to the main entry hall to the rooms, I saw that there wasn't a receptionist. My brother made the typical mischievous suggestion of snooping behind the reception desk, but I told him that it would be boring and that we should continue down the opposite hallway to cr- across the corridor. He agreed, of course. I was older anyway, so I think that played a factor. My brother, sister, and I traipsed down the hallway without a care in the world. Soon we turned a corner, and it revealed another shorter hallway with a pair of double doors at the end. You know how it is. As a kid, a door might as well be a portal to a fantasy land with all these doors were no different. I didn't even think about what might be on the other side, and my siblings never questioned my decision to venture forth. Much to my surprise, the doors opened to a large courtyard. It was square with a glistening fountain in the middle and well-trimmed hedges lining the hotel walls. On the other side of the courtyard was a single door that was covered in some sort of ivy. It appeared to have not been used for quite some time. The three of us let our curiosity get the better of our young minds as we began to explore the courtyard. The place seemed straight out of a fairy tale because birds bathed in the fountain and butterflies fluttered around, making it feel like paradise. Even as a kid, I could appreciate the odd splendor. But I was so focused on the scenery that I failed to notice my brother trying to open the overgrown door. I ran over to him just as he was attempting to turn the handle. I could see he was struggling because vines had wrapped around the knob and it was likely that the door was rusted shut. That thought must have never crossed his mind, nor the thought of why the door had been abandoned to time in the first place. I grabbed his wrist and yanked it away from the knob. "That hurts," he said the moment my hand touched him. "We shouldn't go in there," I said quietly. I hadn't noticed until actually standing next to the door, but it felt unwelcoming. "I just wanted to see if it would open," he protested, while rubbing his wrist. He had an air for the dramatics.
"No, I don't want to get us in trouble. We should go back now anyway." He stared at the door, then back at me. "I guess. But I still want to know what's on the other side." My sister suddenly chimed in from behind us.
"Maybe we could tell Mom about it."
"I don't think we should. She would probably just yell about it being where we shouldn't be. Besides, maybe it's closed for a reason."
"Yeah, maybe," said my brother softly.
"Let's go back."
"Okay,"
he said quickly.
"I hope we're not in trouble," added my sister, subtly.
"Me too," I said while beginning to walk back to the door we came through. My siblings followed, and I opened the door for them and let them through first. As I began to re-enter the hotel hallway, I took one last glance at the forgotten door. Maybe it was just my mind playing tricks on me, or some weird reflection, but I could have sworn I saw a face in a window next to the door. It was faint, but scary, for lack of a better word, as a kid.
"Kids!" The rage-filled voice of my mother flooded the hallway. It sounded like she had already been calling us for a while. It turned my head to face the hallway and slowly let the door close behind me.
I looked at the window one more time before the door closed entirely and found that nothing was in the glass. At the time, I figured it was just my imagination. My mother was furious, and understandably so. Apparently, she had been looking all over for us. We told her where we were, and she asked to see the courtyard. My brother and sister went back into our room, and I led my mother to the door at the end of the opposite hallway. When she saw it, she tried to go out into the courtyard, but the receptionist, the one from the night before, suddenly appeared and scared the shit out of me. "No," he shouted while putting himself between the door and us. "You cannot go out there."
"Why not? We pay for the facilities here," asked my mother.
"Because it's dangerous and off limits, by order of the owner." "You didn't go out there, did you?" he asked while staring at me.
"No," I said quickly. I didn't want to get my mom or stepdad in trouble for not keeping us on a short leash.
The receptionist sighed heavily and said, "Good. Now I'm sure you have plans for the day, yes? Forget about this door and go about your business, please." My mom scowled, but nodded her head and said, "Fine." Then she grabbed my arm and pulled me down the hallway back towards our room. We received the typical parental scolding, the whole, "What if someone stole you?" or "If you got hurt, how would we know?" Both were valid, but it didn't make the verbal reprimand any easier to swallow. After they were done, we finally got to go to breakfast. I had 2 eggs over easy, which ended up being a bit too runny for me, and a few slices of bacon as well as some sausage and hash browns. A large feast, but a delicious one. Once everyone had finished eating, my parents paid and we left. The rest of the day was filled with various activities like souvenir shopping and visiting one of the beaches, like the water was ice cold. Once everyone had finished eating, my parents paid and we left. The rest of the day was filled with various activities like souvenir shopping and visiting one of the beaches, but the water was like ice cold. Then we went back to the hotel and ordered pizza. It was a true vacation experience. But that night, something strange happened. After we were told to go to bed, I found myself unable to sleep. I kept tossing and turning, thinking about the courtyard. Something about it just fascinated me. Like, if it wasn't meant for guests at the hotel, then why were they still maintaining the fountain and the hedges? While I was lost in thought, I heard a scratching sound on the wall next to my bed. At that time, I had already lived in a house with a mouse problem, so I figured the hotel had them too. But the sound only got louder. Instead of a light scraping, it soon sounded like someone drastically clawing to get out. I couldn't imagine the damage one would do to their fingernails by doing such a thing, but it's all I can equate it to. I wanted to just ignore it, but it was impossible. So I hit the wall, and the wall thumped back. I immediately jumped out of the bed and stood at it ready. My brother had somehow remained asleep and didn't seem like my parents had heard any of it either. After whatever was on the other side of the wall responded, it became silent. I thought, maybe I'm just tired, okay? And that this thing was just a waking nightmare. But that was wishful thinking, for as I was standing there next to my bed, I watched as a panel in the wall slowly creaked open. I yelled instantly and the panel slammed shut. It was truly terrifying. My mother rushed into the room and I flipped the lights on with an angry look on her face. I could only point my finger to the wall and then she asked what was wrong.
I told her exactly what happened. She didn't believe me, though. And to add insult to injury, for whatever reason, there wasn't a single noticeable sign of a panel ever existing in the wall. But I know what I saw. The next day, I got a stern talking to about how we are trying to enjoy this time together. But as a kid, I had little in the way of vocal defense. I had to just accept what was being said, even though the event from the previous night had caused me to lose all sleep, which, to me, meant that it was more than a dream. We all had breakfast and then went to see the giant sequoias. Let me tell you, if you haven't seen the redwoods, it is truly a sight to behold. We even saw a bear while taking the bus ride to see the trees. While we were out walking, my brother and sister both asked me about the night before. I told them, and it obviously scared them. So much, in fact, that they ran to our parents and said that they didn't want to stay in the hotel anymore. My mother was angry with me, like it was my fault. I told them the truth. What else was I going to say? Anyway, she was mad and I was confused. This continued until we arrived back at the hotel later that day, and when we were greeted by the receptionist upon walking in. I shouldn't say greeted, because he was actually standing in our way. "Can I help you?" asked my mother with an annoyed tone. "Yes. Excuse me. We received a complaint about knocking coming from your room last night. We had new guests arrive quite late, and their sleep was interrupted by whatever rackets you were creating. Please do refrain from waking the other guests." "My son was having a nightmare. I apologize," said my mother solemnly, as if her entire personality had been deflated.
The receptionist quickly nodded. "Yes, well, nothing to be scared of here." He then smiled at me, and I noticed two of his teeth were black. I returned his smile with an uncertain grin. There was an awkward silence before he walked away, and we went back to our room. My mom and stepdad went to their room, presumably to argue, and us kids were left in the living room. There was cable at the hotel, and we found some cartoons to watch while we waited for our parents to reemerge from their room. Quite some time passed, and they still hadn't come out. I started to fall asleep on the couch and was about to push my brother off of it so that I could lay down. Then suddenly a knock came from the room door. It was a soft knock, not one from an adult. I looked at my brother and sister, and they both stared at the door. Our parents didn't come to answer it, so I took the initiative. As I was approaching, more knocks came. They didn't sound frantic, but more friendly?
Anyway, once I reached the door, I slowly turned the knob, and it opened. There stood, at about the same height as me, another boy and who I assumed was his little sister. He was smiling and looked happy to see someone roughly his own age. "Hello," he said with wide, excited eyes. "My name is Elias, and this is my sister Ashlyn." He pointed to the visibly shy girl standing next to him.
Hello, what do you want? I asked quietly.
We were wondering if you would want to play with us. Our parents said we could ask after we saw you coming in from our room window.
Elias seemed overly excited. My brother peered over my shoulder and whispered, "Who is it?" I turned to him and said, "Some other kids from another room."
"What do they want?"
he asked while eyeing them suspiciously. "They want to play."
"Are we going to?"
"Mama would be mad if we leave without saying anything." Elias must have overheard me because he chimed in,
"Oh no, don't worry about that. Our parents said that they were going to come over and introduce themselves, so we can play while they're doing that."
"Oh," I said sharply. "Well?" asked Elias, while smiling expectantly. My sister appeared on the opposite of me. "What's happening?" she asked calmly.
"I guess we're going to play with Elias and his sister. Their family just got here. Their parents said they could play with us if we wanted."
"Hi, Elias," said my sister from over my shoulder.
"Hello, this is my sister, Ashlyn. Maybe you could talk to each other."
"Sure," said my sister without a hint of uncertainty.
"You're sure your parents are going to come over?" I asked curiously. I know this all sounds like one of those "what are you doing" situations, but you have to remember, I was very young.
"Yep, they said they would, so come on."
Elias gestured his hand into the hallway. I cautiously stepped out of the room, followed by my brother and sister. Elias began leading us down the hallway and across the corridor that led to the hotel entrance. We kept following him until we reached the hall and that housed the door leading to the courtyard. I stopped Elias.
"We aren't supposed to go out there. The guy at the counter said the owner doesn't like it."
"That's okay. We'll just go in and out really quickly. Ashlyn and I found it earlier, but didn't get time to check it out."
"Well, we have seen it. There's nothing special, and it's late. We won't be able to see very well, and someone could get hurt."
"No one will get hurt. Come on, let's go."
I didn't want to just let them go in there by themselves in case something happened, so I went with them, despite the reluctant looks from my brother and sister. Elias got to the door first. He opened it and held it open for everyone else. We walked out into the courtyard and waited for him to join us. It was probably around 8, so the sun was out, but just barely. I can tell you with this certainty. There was just enough light to see that the door was wide open. Elias noticed it too.
"What's in there?"
he asked, pointing to the previously inaccessible doorway.
"We don't know. It wasn't open before."
"Oh, let's go take a look."
"I don't think that's a good idea, Elias," said his little sister, Ashlyn, finally speaking for the first time. She was tugging at his sleeve.
"Stop being a baby. It'll only take a second."
Tears began to well up in her eyes.
"Don't call me a baby," she said softly. "Then come with me," snapped Elias.
It would seem he wasn't very kind to his younger sibling. Without another word, Ashlyn began following her brother to the open door. I went as well, but I held my hand up to signal for my brother and sister to stay back. I didn't want them to be blamed for anything that might happen upon entering the closed-off section of the hotel. Elias reached the door and went inside without so much as an inkling of caution. Ashlyn was close behind, and I approached with far more trepidation. Upon entering, we were met by a short hallway straight ahead with a small staircase butted against the right wall. To the left was another hallway, but it was more of a nook because it ended with what looked like a closet. I tried to flip a dusty light switch next to me and was surprised to see an extremely dim orange glow coming from a few old lanterns on the wall. The light illuminated peeling, dull gray wallpaper with flowery patterns that crawled halfway down the wall before meeting equally old wood paneling. To me, it seemed the place was only home to spiders, and there were countless webs adorning every solitary and otherwise visible corner. Wherever the stairs led must have had a different switch, because there wasn't anything light up there. I found it odd that the floor had numerous gouges right near the door, as if something had been trying to get out, and each of the four doors in the hallway did not have knobs. The mystery of the missing knobs was short-lived, because a quick glance to the hallway floor revealed all four covered in rust. Elias surveyed the room and smiled deviously.
Wow, it's so old.
Yeah, now that we've seen it, can we leave? I asked, trying not to go further into the section. I turned to see my sibling standing next to the fountain. It was good that they listened to me.
We just got here. Let's explore a little bit, demanded Elias.
Go right ahead. I'm standing here.
What, are you a coward?
I just don't like this place.
So you're scared?
No, Elias. I'm just normal.
Well, not wanting to explore a cool old place like this is not normal to me, he said harshly.
Whatever you say. He walked further into the hallway and stopped in front of one of the doors. He looked down and reached for one of the knobs.
Hey, the floor over here is darker than the rest, said Elias.
That's great, I said quickly. Ashlyn stayed near me while her brother explored, but something about the air, perhaps it was even a gut feeling, felt off, wrong even.
Come over here,
requested Elias while poking one of the knobs with his fingers.
Fine, but I'm not staying over there. I huffed and marched towards him. Then it all makes sense. The doorknobs weren't rusty. They were bloody. They were covered in dry blood. A lot of it, too. The dark stain spread from the base of each door onto portions of the wood paneling on the walls. At that moment, I had another epiphany. What if the reason this section was closed off was because of some horrific crime that happened within? Time suddenly seemed to slow down as the door right behind Elias opened up. Ashlyn screamed, and I stood in shock as a large arm covered in a papery substance emerged. Elias didn't react fast enough, and neither did I. Another arm protruded from the dark, holding a pair of old scissors. The way it held them was odd as well. It had its thumb in one loop and its middle finger in the other, and its index finger directly between the blades. And then I saw its face. The same face that still haunts me to this day.
Paper from the nose up. But the part that wasn't covered by paper is what sticks with me. Its mouth. It was like that of a leech, with several rows of incredibly sharp teeth in a circle-like fashion.
The pulsating maw created a plethora of uncomfortable noises that make my skin crawl even now just thinking about them. However, another arm suddenly appeared, and then another, and they kept appearing until I counted at least 9, and each one of them held a different item, apart from the first one, which held nothing. But all the time I spent focusing on that terrifying entity before me should have been spent paying attention to what it was actually doing. For in the blink of an eye, the creature jammed the scissors into Elias's back. He screamed, but only for a moment because the creature silenced him with a paper mouth cover. I haven't ever been able to forget the look of his eyes as they stared at me, searching for help where I could not give it. Then the creature receded into the dark room beyond the doorway. Ashlyn fainted from fear, and I didn't know what else to do. The only thing that came to mind was getting my parents, and so I ran over to Ashlyn and picked her up to carry her out of there. Can you imagine what it's like as a child to even just see such a thing in some sort of media form, let alone in person? I have to be honest, as I think about it now, I'm not sure how I managed to keep myself together. There were so many horrendous sounds stemming from that room that the walls must have been terribly thin because it was incredibly loud. I was just about to reach the doorway with Ashlyn when it closed unexpectedly. I couldn't really try to open it since I was carrying her, and even though she was younger than me, she was heavy. I wasn't going to leave her for that thing, but now I wasn't sure if I'd have a choice. The door housing the creature slowly creaked open, and I just knew it was coming to claim us next. I didn't have time to think about what I was going to do. Instead, I ran down the hallway with the closet at the end and pushed the shutter door open. I wasn't able to see the creature coming out of the door from there, but Ashlyn and I simply needed a place to hide. I carried her in, set her down on the floor, and then slid the door shut as quietly as possible. The door was one of those flimsy ones on wheels that have shutter gaps, so you can see in and out of the closet. The sun had to have fully set at that point, which only made it more difficult to see anything. The lamps on the walls gave only a few feet of visibility, if even that. Still, I kept peering between the shutter gaps at the corner, just waiting for any sign of that thing. And I didn't have to wait long. In almost as short of a time as it takes to blink, the entire hallway that led to the closet was covered end to end with a creature's body. Even though the light was low, I could see it splattered in blood. The creature seemed to be sniffing the air, and every so often I could hear various chattering noises coming from it. Ashlyn began to stir. She was groaning, and I knew that if she made even so much as a loud sigh, that thing would find us. So far, it didn't seem to know. I leaned down and gently put my hand over her mouth before whispering to her, "Please, be quiet. I'm going to get us out of here, but neither one of us will get out if you make a noise." She didn't say anything. I couldn't see her eyes, but she tapped my hand softly, which was enough for me to know she understood. I released my hand and returned to peering through the gaps. Unfortunately, the creature was still scanning the hall, but I couldn't understand how it saw anything at all, given that it didn't seem to have eyes. Not visible ones, anyway. The creature continued to suspend and stretch itself across the entire hallway, and I began to wonder if it was simply waiting for us to emerge. Perhaps it already knew we were in here, but wanted to offer a false sense of safety.
I can tell you, with absolute certainty, that I felt everything but safe, and all I wanted was for us to go somewhere else, just for a minute, just enough time to get out. Ashlyn grabbed onto my arm and held tightly. She was scared, and so was I. But her brother wasn't there anymore, and I knew she was relying on me for protection. So I tried not to show my fear. Finally, we got our chance. I'm not sure what it was, but something made noise somewhere else in the area, and the creature immediately scurried off to investigate. I grabbed Ashlyn's hand and flung the door open. It sounded like the creature was attacking something nearby, which made it easier for us to slip out unnoticed. My heart was racing. I was drenched in sweat. My breathing was quick. Ashlyn was squeezing my hand as hard as she could, and her grip only tightened the closer we got to the door into the courtyard. We swiftly reached the door, and I opened it. The moment the night air invaded the section, I heard stumbling and thumping behind us. I pushed Ashlyn through the doorway and turned around to face the abandoned halls. And there, I was met face to face with the creature. It had descended upon me with fierce intent and was absurdly furious with having its door open. Or perhaps it was thankful. I'm not sure. Whatever the case may be, I took a step back and slammed the door shut, sealing us from the creature. Although at the time, I didn't know how much protection a simple door like that would actually provide. It must have done the trick, though, because nothing further happened, and we seemed safe. All sound dissipated except for the quiet chirping of insects and the faint cascading of water from the fountain. My siblings were horrified. They must have seen what happened up until the door closed for the first time. I'm fairly certain they were in shock, like Ashlyn was. She couldn't speak and wouldn't respond to me, even when I tried to talk to her. Poor girl. I wasn't able to help her in any meaningful way, or rather, not in the way she needed. And then the yelling came. The righteous fury I called my mother was nearly screaming our names. I had no idea what I would tell her. But we would tell Ashlyn's parents, but I landed with the truth, even if they didn't believe me. My mother came storming through the door leading into the courtyard and almost tripped over a stray stone. That only made her angrier. When she reached us, she grabbed my arm with a vice grip. Obviously, I protested, but her immediate abrasive shut me right up. She brought me before two unfamiliar people, and it only took a couple of seconds for me to realize they were Elias and Ashlyn's parents. When only the latter was present, they turned their attention away from me. Ashlyn was standing next to my sister, like a statue with wide, traumatized eyes that showcased an inability to come to terms with what had happened. I didn't blame her, because I wasn't well either. I'm still not well. Her father knelt by her side and asked, "Sweetie, where's your brother?" She didn't respond, and so he turned back to me. "Where's our son?" "Something took him," I said quietly. Although I was good with English, I did not have the right words for the moment. "What do you mean, something?" asked his mother, confused. "In the other section of the hotel, there's something in there, and it took Elias." My mom looked at my siblings, who were trembling, and asked, "Is that true?" They both nodded without saying a word. The receptionist appeared and was obviously seething with anger. He must have overheard the conversation and promptly interjected himself, only to express his disdain for children
and his I warn you attitude.
Ashlyn and Elias's parents called the police. I remember sitting in the hallway talking to an incredibly nice officer who asked me simple questions. Ones that I could actually answer. I told her everything the best I could, and she seemed skeptical. Who wouldn't be? But she was also listening intently. I felt heard, and that was all that mattered. Anyway, the police refused to listen to the receptionist's pleas of leaving that section of the hotel alone. They went in with a small team, and after only a couple of minutes, I heard gunshots. Shortly thereafter, one of the officers emerged, covered in blood and seemingly shook to the core. They began to tear into the receptionist. I honestly can't remember what they said because it was such a tumultuous experience, but I know it had to do with the creature.
Let's give our writer one final shout out. Like, fuck yeah! That was so good! You can find them on Reddit under the username Kessel the Viking. Because of them, I am not sure I am ever going to be able to sleep well in a hotel again. Well, that's today's extra long, super fun episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I will come into your nightmares again next month. Oh, wait. Don't go away yet. Here's the last piece of the story. Enjoy.
If you dare. From what I gathered, the police killed the creature. They found Elias dead in the room it came out of, with his face missing. Then they proceeded to explore upstairs. I think I overheard one of the returning officers say something about numerous doll-like bodies suspended from the ceiling. And the other that say they used to be alive. While Ashlyn's parents were heartbroken and rightfully stricken with grief, they thanked me for saving their daughter. I didn't really know how to react or respond, so I simply said, "You're welcome." It was a long night with a lot of people going back and forth throughout the hotel. They tore down walls, busted down doors, and asked loads of questions. By the time morning came, we were told to go to a different hotel, which the police department kindly paid for. My mother held the three of us almost the whole night after learning what happened. And ever since then, she became a different person. She was humbler and far quieter. For the sake of privacy, the name of the hotel and everyone involved have either been changed or excluded. I'm not telling anyone not to visit Lake Tahoe. I just thought it was important to share this experience. Be mindful of the places you stay while traveling. You never know what could be lurking in your very room. I declare this meeting of the Guild with Dim Light Anxiety closed. Until next month, may you have better luck with travel and books. Creep it real! This podcast does not condone any physical harm on yourself or others. These are fictional stories intended only for entertainment.